plate a potential nugget.
And I loved one of the quotes in the book, David. I'm going to quote from the book. You know, you say, when problems are complex and intertwined, things can feel messy. Imagine there's a muddy swamp and you need to cross it to get to the high ground on the other side. At first, you carefully look for rocks to step on so that you don't get mud on your shoes. But halfway across, the rocks end and you have a choice. Do I go on and wade through the swamp, or should I just turn around? Can you say more about this phenomenon since you spoke about risk?
Well, let me tell you how I experience. So let's say I'm raising an issue. I'll say with my wife, Eva, and who I love dearly. And I raise one issue and I say, gee, honey, when you do X, you know, and she says, well, as a matter of fact, the reason I do X is because I get really bothered when you do Y. And I say, well, the trouble is that the reason why I do Y is because of, you know, I don't know about this and about that. And she says, there's that. And all of a sudden, what seemed like a very simple piece of feedback is now a pretty muddy swamp. Because there are at least five different issues all building on each other. And they probably build on each other because we haven't raised them early enough. Okay, which is frequently a problem with all of us. Temptation at this point is to say, oh, it's nothing. And to get turn around and go back away, staying on the rocks. And I think what you need to do is you need to say, there's a hell of a lot here and it's pretty messy. But let's stick in it and see what all these issues are. And rather than using the issues as bludgeons to justify ourselves, let's take it apart. And it may be a longer conversation than you expected. And it may be a conversation that can't be resolved in one sitting. But can we go through the swamp and clean those up? Okay, I see that when I do X, that's how it bothers you. And you're saying it leads you to do Y. So what can we do about it? And now we can get into problem solving. Remember, feedback starts a conversation. It doesn't end it. We wish it would end it. We wish that I could say, Deepak, would you do X? This is the impact on me. And you say, yes, I've got it. That's it. And we walk away. There are some issues like that, but in most cases, it's intertwined and we need to work it out and problem solve various ways of doing it. And what we say is, can you take the risk of sticking in there, not getting into the blame game, but focus on behavior and the impact on you?
I'm reminded of my conversation with Jennifer Goldman-Wetzler, a lady who studied conflict habits in some detail and rigor. She says that people often gravitate towards four default modes of conflict, and it's helpful to understand our default preference and ensure that it doesn't come in the way of a meaningful outcome.
So there are four conflict habits. One of them is one that I mentioned before, which is that some of us, in our quest to win a conflict, we might feel competitive, and this can be a healthy thing. But when we take it to an extreme, when we habitually want to win a conflict, it can get to the point where we end up, or other people end up experiencing us as blaming them. And so we will kind of go on the attack and blame other people. In contrast, others of us habitually blame ourselves. We may blame and shame ourselves. So again, we may do this with good intentions. So our intention may be to learn from a situation and do better next time. But when we habitually do this, sometimes we end up stewing in our own negative self-talk, which doesn't free us from any kind of conflict whatsoever. It just keeps us stuck in that conflict situation. The third conflict habit is shut down. And that is where we may, again, well-intentionally avoid a conflict situation, which can be a helpful way to deal with conflict when, for example, the issue is not that important to you, or the person you're dealing with is not that important to you. And so avoidance can be useful. But again, when that's the only way that we know how to deal with conflict, and we're avoiding issues that are important, or we're avoiding people whose relationships are important to us, then it becomes an unhealthy way to deal with conflict. And what typically happens is that the conflict, you know, will avoid. The conflict is kind of bubbling slowly, simmering, and then boom, you know, it explodes at a point when we least expect it. And then we have to go deal with that, and we're not prepared. And then finally, one of the other ones that we talked about before is relentlessly collaborate. And that is where we have been taught often, like we were saying before, from a young age, that the way to deal with conflict is to offer other people options, think about what their interests might be, come up with creative solutions, work with them to come up with those creative solutions. And again, that's a really excellent toolbox and skill set to have. And for so many millennia, people didn't have that way of thinking about dealing with conflict. And we got into all sorts of messes because we didn't have that skill set. But even that, people can get so tied and committed to using this collaborative skill set that we end up pouring energy, time, resources, money into trying to work things out with someone or a group of people who just aren't interested in collaborating or cooperating with us.
The key takeaway for me here is that sometimes avoiding conflict can often lead us to an okay relationship. But to really take the relationship to the next level, we need to embrace the messiness, engage in the conflict in a healthy manner, and then move forward. Knowing our conflict preferences can help us be more tactful in having a productive conflict that strengthens the relationship than a conflict where things fall apart. Thank you for listening.